because the only way that you end rape culture is by inculcating in society a universally, openly talked about, promoted, understood, operated, and very importantly, aspired to gold standard of what constitute good sexual values and good sexual behavior. When we do that, we also end Me Too. We end sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual violence, all areas where the perpetrators currently rely on the fact that we do not talk about sex to ensure their victims will never speak up.
Welcome to The Gender Knot. Today we are talking about sex and porn and real versus fake sex and everything in between. I am Sam Baker, one of our co-producers, and we also have Jonathan Blackwell with us.
Hi, I'm Johnny, the other co-producer of the podcast.
And so we're taking over the show this week. Naz and Dan are taking a little break, and they'll be back next week.
I hope Naz and Dan want us back sometime.
Now that we've taken over and just talked about porn for an episode.
Don't forget to review us on iTunes.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear what Naz's reaction is to this surprise episode that she did not know.
So just for more context, Naz and Dan don't know what we're talking about. So this could go interestingly. I can't wait to hear the reactions.
Yeah, me too. Just a few reminders before we jump into the topic for today. You can get great Gender Knot t-shirts if you go to thegenderknot.com. And while you're there, you can donate to us on our Patreon page. And that helps support the show because we are an independent podcast. And for a limited time, if you donate $5 or more a month, so just like the cost of a coffee, basically, Dan will write you a personalized joke. So that's a pretty great incentive to go sign up to be a supporter.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all super funny.
Yeah, I know. I want a personalized joke, yeah, so maybe I should sign up. And then don't forget as well to rate us on iTunes. And then we've had some really great discussions on our Facebook group lately, so definitely find us on Facebook and join in on the conversation.
Yep, all that. That's all good. I endorse all that.
Well, yeah, let's jump in. Well, actually, I want to say one disclaimer first, maybe. I love both my parents, but in the case that either of them are listening to this episode, maybe just skip this one.
I don't mind. Anyone can listen.
So, yeah, we talked about this episode a long time ago. It's been a while in the making, but I was just interested in tackling this topic because I find porn really challenging to watch as a woman, and especially as a self-identified feminist, mostly because it's just so fake and unrealistic to actual sex. So yeah, I kind of wanted to dive into that and pull it apart a little bit and also look at how it might be changing as our culture changes as well.
Yeah, I guess I was quite interested because obviously being gay, I don't quite appreciate the subtleties, I think, of straight porn. And I think listening to the interviews that you did, I definitely learned some stuff that I didn't think I fully appreciated.
Well, and I think that's interesting because I have watched gay porn before as well. And I feel like gay male porn is, it's very different because it's more kind of egalitarian, whereas straight porn and even like lesbian porn is very much from a male gaze. Like, you can tell the camera is pointing at whatever it's pointing at with the thought of a male viewer in mind. And yeah, some of it's just completely unbelievable.
I would say I probably attempted to watch straight porn like once or twice in my life, and it's just clearly not my market. Not for me. The ads can keep popping up, but I'm not going to be clicking on them. But I can appreciate what you're saying. Like, I think porn does have that reputation of what you've been saying. You know, it does seem very much for the kind of straight male gaze. And I can't begin to imagine what kind of watching some of that stuff as a woman would be, really.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenging things about it, as well as how it does kind of seep into society and actual sex lives a little bit, and that's why I wanted to talk to our two guests today, because I think often when you do get into real sex, you know, in your personal life, as a straight woman anyway, certain porn kind of stereotypes can come out in how men think they should be having sex and how occasionally even women feel they should be like performing in sex. Yeah. And I think it's just really messed up on both sides.
I think you're right in that also a lot of straight guys learn a lot about, I guess, sex at the, you know, at a young age, and learn about women and how women work from porn. I guess being gay, you kind of know how guys work a bit differently. Like if you're a guy, you kind of know how guys are. So I guess if you watch gay porn, then I guess you're right, it is a bit more egalitarian. Whereas straight porn, if that's all your exposure to women and sex with women as a straight guy, you are going to get some kind of weird ways of thinking about things and thinking about how it works. You must just see it and be like, this is how it is. And then in practice, it isn't anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think especially with the two-sided situation of not learning about the relationship and human aspect of sex from sex ed and having the internet so readily available, it's become the way to learn about what sex is supposed to be.
Yeah. And there's some like weird shit out there. Like there's some really weird shit. And like I can't begin to imagine like some like 14, 50-year-old guys seeing some of this and being like, this is how it is. And then they like hit 16, 17, 18 and actually get a girlfriend. And then them being like, right, let's reenact what I'm used to watching. Like the girls must be like, holy shit. Like, I don't know what you've been seeing.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think the kind of unrealistic body expectations are one of the more obvious examples, but even just like the noises that women make in porn that I feel like are often very obviously faked, but then I've run into men who like think that's how sex is supposed to sound.
Oh my goodness.
And it's just like kind of mind-blowing, to be honest. So
I guess if the videos are your only point of reference to sex, then it's all the education you have. And I think the topic of sex education is, you know, a big thing. I think in a way what you're saying is sort of porn makes up for the lack of sex education, and that becomes porn becomes people's point of reference rather than sex ed.
Yeah, exactly. So our first guest that I talked to today is Sam Carr. He's a senior lecturer in education and the director of studies for education with psychology at the University of Bath in the UK. And so, yeah, he talked a little bit about porn and what it's doing to our relationships.
I wanted to start with kind of what you touched on in your articles, and maybe you can just give like a brief overview of what you think is wrong with porn in today's society, and like what you see as some of the potential problems.
Sure. I mean, I guess to start that off, I think that the first thing I would say is that it's very difficult to deny that porn is incredibly pervasive as a technology. There's so many statistics that sort of back that up. It's a £13 billion a year industry in the US. 9 out of 10 boys, some data suggests, have been exposed to it by the time they're 18. Over a quarter of a billion people in 2017 used mobile porn. I think somewhere there's a statistic that suggests over 28,000 people use it per second.
Wow.
One in five mobile searches are for internet pornography. So I think it's difficult to deny that it's really, really pervasive. And something that pervasive, we ought to be considering what it's normalizing in the people that are using it, or potentially normalizing. And I think that for me is the key issue to think about. What could it be normalizing? In terms of what men think about women, how men see women, how women see themselves, how men see sex, what sex means to men, you know, that kind of issue is what I'm really interested in. And I think that there's at least enough evidence that we should at least be raising red flags around things like whether or not porn is teaching men to objectify and devalue women in relation to the sexual experience, what women's role might be in the sexual experience, what they expect of women in relation to sex and love and relationships, whether they have empathy for women. All of those things, I think, we went into pornography, I think, with no idea of what it might do in relation to those things. And I think we surely have a sort of ethical obligation to work that out, although it's a bit late in some senses now.
Yeah.
We're doing it backwards.
Yeah.
So I have a significant concern about what it's doing to us in a relational sense.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of that kind of has to do with the fact that it's a stand-in for education about sex, that we're lacking kind of having that broader conversation at early ages for both genders, but I think particularly it affects boys in terms of kind of being the way that they learn about sex.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I only have to think about my own sex education as a kid, and there was nothing critical about pornography in my education as a British teenager, for example. There was nothing in it that forced me to think about pornography and what it might be and what sex was beyond the biological details. There's not a great deal there. And I certainly think in the UK, we significantly are lacking that education.
Yeah.
For young people, we're just lacking it completely.
Yeah. There's no kind of conversation about the actual relationship aspect or like really interacting with another human, I feel like. And you touched on before too, this kind of lack of empathy and this kind of objectification. I mean, I guess as a woman and like a lot of women I know kind of don't watch it for that reason, or if we do, it's kind of through a lens of like, obviously this is fake and, you know, like understanding that. But how do you think that, you know, especially for younger boys, maybe like this being a first exposure to kind of like what sex might look like, or how do you think that kind of psychologically impacts their education about sex?
Well, I mean, just to give you an example of how it might, I mean, it's impossible for me to say for sure how it does. I think there's probably many, many different ways people are impacted by porn, and I think there are some people who likely possess the critical awareness and whatever it may be that they need to possess to sort of buffer its impact, and maybe it doesn't affect them significantly. But if you just think about, there's been some great studies on just content analysing pornographic scripts, and if you look at what the vast majority of the most viewed material is depicting, it tends to be full of things like atypical representations of women being subjected to physical aggression, for example, or verbal aggression. The woman tending to like that, for example, and being stimulated by it and turned on by it. The woman being a stranger to the man, for example, is quite a common one. The woman being treated in a relatively derogatory way, her body being treated in a particularly in quite a derogatory way. If we're saying it's pervasive and that's its dominant script, I guess the big questions are, to what extent does that sink in to young boys' psyches? And it could depend on, for example, how much they're viewing it, the extent to which they have a critical education present in their life to buffer that, whatever that may be, whether it's formal or even parents informally at home. In some way, shape or form, it could be buffered by that. But what I think we don't know is what that's doing to us. And there is suggestions that when that becomes, I mean, it could be that some boys do that once a week. Some boys may watch it hourly. Some boys may watch it more than that. It could be altering the fundamental ways that we see sex, think about women in sex. And we don't have enough evidence that it isn't doing that to continue on this pathway without, I think, some kind of at least attempt to grab hold of what it might be doing to us. And I agree with you that there is no one likely effect. And I think there are many people that say to me, well, actually, the pornography has liberalised my sex life. It's given me lots of sexual knowledge that I didn't know. My partner and I use it safely. I'm sure that that's possible. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting or denying that that is true. But that does not negate the possibility that it is significantly damaging lots of other people.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean damaging directly, but also the people that those people then go on to relate to.
Right.
And have intimate relationships with. It's a sort of indirect damage. And there's a lot of evidence to show that partners of people who are addicted to pornography or use it frequently are more damaged by it than the person using it significantly.
I'm kind of curious, like, what you think potential solutions to these kind of effects in society might be? Is it just that we need to have the conversation in the first place, or do you see other kind of potential things that could change some of the negative effects?
Our only option is either we begin curbing it in sort of more explicit legal ways, but that's clearly a bit of a rabbit hole because it would be very difficult to do and it would have many intricacies and complexities attached to it. Or the other option is we become our own policemen and we sort of decide for ourselves critically, though, what's right or wrong. And I know that there are websites cropping up. There's quite a big one called Your Brain on Porn, I think, which is a kind of men's movement where men are realizing, oh my God, this has become a bit of a monster for me, and it's beginning to change my relationship, the way that I relate to women, and I can feel and understand that I need to do something about this and wean myself off it. It's kind of like a self-generated community of people who need to help themselves out of the hole that they've dug themselves into with porn. So the fact that communities like that spring up, there aren't many of them, but they do exist, suggests that people are seeing a need for assistance in relation to it. But that's again a bit too late. It's when it tends to have got to a point where people feel like they're addicted, or it's warping the way that they see their partners, or their lives are changing because of it. And that's quite a long way. It's not preventative, put it that way. It's kind of palliative. Mm-hmm. And I think we need something much more preventative than we have. But what that looks like needs to be imagined by all of us, I think. And men and women. So many men that I know and have spoken to and have known in my life, I don't think we really think about as men what it's like, how we might be impacting women on a bigger scale by indulging ourselves in pornography, for example. I don't think we think about it.
Yeah, so I thought what Sam said was really interesting. And one of the things I picked up, and I think people that have listened to a few episodes of our podcasts and a couple I've been on, I go on about men's groups quite a lot, and I found it quite interesting when he mentioned that there's like the self-help, online self-help communities that are kind of springing up, kind of men that have realized that they're perhaps addicted to porn or have too much reliance on porn, and they're kind of all talking to each other. It reminded me of men's groups a lot, which I love talking about. But it was so relevant, and it's almost like we've said on the podcast before, maybe, you know, straight men need to get together for men's groups, and it's the same thing. Maybe straight guys need to get together and talk about porn and actually learn, well, not talk about porn, but more talk about what real sex is and actually kind of compare notes on what reality is, rather than sort of this weird kind of online thing, videos they've been seeing for years that don't match reality.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Although I have talked to guy friends before, and like, it's interesting when they do have those conversations about sex with each other, and it's a little bit, occasionally sounds like the blind leading the blind.
Yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to read what those chat groups actually talk about.
But I guess I've talked about this kind of stuff with my straight male friends before. And I guess, yeah, like, guys are a bit awkward talking about, like, porn habits and stuff, but I think there is an awareness. I will say there is an awareness among straight men that what they are watching isn't reality. They do seem to have a certain level of, like, there is a level of understanding. They know that it's a slight illusion. So I wouldn't go as far as to be like, all guys expect it to be exactly as it is online. I think it might be the younger people that are watching it. As he said, that the young 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, they're the ones that just are impressionable, and they expect it to be what they see.
Well, that's kind of interesting, and sort of leads me into our next guest, Cindy Gallup. She dates younger men, and she ran into this problem where these younger guys were expecting porn-like things in the bedroom.
Wow.
So she was like, what is going on? And she realized that these younger guys were learning about sex from porn. So she decided to start this website called Make Love Not Porn.
Okay, what is that? I don't know what that is.
I didn't really either until I kind of was researching feminist porn and kind of new ways to think about watching sex online. So she very specifically says it's not porn because the people in the videos are real people having real sex kind of for their own enjoyment. But the concept behind it is like having a social network, so Facebook, Twitter, whatever, but for sex. So it's really kind of, I find it kind of like revolutionary and really interesting to think about.
Hold up. So like, it might be like, instead of being like, oh, I'm at a fun event, I'm going to share a picture of me on Insta, it might be like, I'm going to share some like clips of me having sex. Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is quite bold.
Yeah. And I guess the thought behind it is that if we can be more open about sex and have conversations around it and show what sex actually looks like among, you know, real people, that we'll have a healthier grasp on our own sex lives and how we communicate with others about sex. these videos, when you go on to see them, often have a little teaser trailer bit to them.
Okay.
Because you have to pay for the service. But in that section, often, if it's a couple or a single person or a threesome or whatever, they'll like talk about how they know each other and who they are and like what type of sex they're going to be having in the video that you're going to then watch.
Oh my goodness.
And it just kind of contextualizes it, which sounds cheesy, but actually, like, at least for me, I think makes me like more comfortable in watching something like that, knowing that, okay, these people are all consenting.
Surely, like, some people, when they want to watch porn, they just want to like have a wank. Like, they just want some like masturbation material. Like, they don't really, don't some people just want to get into it? Like, they don't really want the whole, like, this is what we're going to be doing and this is all consensual. Like, you know, are people going to engage with that?
Yeah, well, she has an interesting kind of anecdote about a guy who said, you know, I'll never pay for porn. But I'll let her tell that
okay.
in our conversation.
Well, I think this all sounds pretty wild. I'm pretty vanilla. Like, I'm just vanilla in my interests. And this sounds pretty out there. I'm interested to hear what she's going to say.
Well, here's my conversation with Cindy Gallup, founder and CEO of Make Love Not Porn and founder and CEO of the sex tech fund All Sky Holdings.
So with the kind of social media aspect, I think one thing that's really interesting about Make Love Not Porn kind of as a platform is the sharing options you've built into it, that you can gift someone a video. And I mean, that obviously mirrors other social media that's all about community and sharing things. But I think in terms of how people use other social media right now for sex, it tends to be relegated to the very private platforms such as Snapchat or WhatsApp or just sexting. So I'm curious, in terms of that, like, what are your goals, particularly around sharing and real world sex, I guess, with friends or others?
There are two responses to the question you've asked. I mean, the first is, we call ourselves at Make Love Not Porn the social sex revolution. The revolutionary part is not the sex, it's the social. When I launched Make Love Not Porn 9 years ago as this tiny, clunky little website, Porn World versus Real World, it got an extraordinary response despite the tininess and the clunkiness. And I believe that response was because MakeLoveNotPorn.com was a manifestation of me. And what I mean by that is, MakeLoveNotPorn.com was, and actually MakeLoveNotPorn.tv is, very simple, very straightforward, honest, truthful, down-to-earth, utterly non-judgmental, and it has a sense of humor. We never get to have conversations about sex within those parameters. The moment we do, the floodgates open. I can tell you, after 9 years of working on Make Love Not Porn, that everybody in the world is dying to talk about sex. And when you normalize that, and when you give them a safe social space in which to do that, and to express themselves socially, sexually, people jump at the chance. The second thing I would say to you is, the young white male founders of the giant tech platforms of today are not the primary targets of online and offline harassment, abuse, violence, sexual assault. Therefore, they don't design for it. So if you ever try and talk to anybody at Snapchat or WhatsApp about the fact that their huge valuations, their gigantic rounds of funding, their enormous IPOs have been driven by one thing and one thing only, sexting. They will evade the question. They refuse to engage with that topic in any way at all. Here's the problem. When you, A, refuse to acknowledge that sexting is a perfectly normal universal human activity, and B, refuse to acknowledge the shit ton of it goes on your platform, you don't design for it. You do not design for consensuality, privacy, security, confidentiality, intimacy, and that's why we have a colossal global revenge porn problem. Make Love Not Porn is a female-founded venture with a team that is more female than male. We spent literally years concepting and designing MakeLoveNotPorn.tv before we ever built it, because we knew that if we were going to invite people to do what they've never done before, socially share their real-world sex, we had to think through every possible ramification of that in order to create a completely safe and trustworthy space. So that's why the heart and soul of Make Love Not Porn is something that every other tech platform should have designed in from the get-go: human curation. And I designed it so that we can scale that, even when, as we sincerely hope one day to become, we are a billion-dollar venture. It's absolutely fundamental to creating the safe, trustworthy space. And that's because this was was founded by a woman and designed by women who are the people who have to think every single day about the enormous vulnerability we have in our society. So everything that we want to encourage people to do to drive the social sex revolution has been thought through and designed in order to enable people to do that in a way that is fun, is welcome, and enables them to socially, sexually self-express as their authentic selves. And that's its appeal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that really comes through, especially with the videos that some of them have as their like sneak peek to them, I guess, just a person or a couple, whoever's in the video, just talking to you as a viewer, as almost like they're just having a normal conversation before the sex itself, which I think is really unique and often honest about sex and just refreshing.
So Sam, the reason we have, and I should explain for the benefit of your viewers, that mm-hmm. we ask every Make Love Not Porn star to make a free to access intro video to accompany their real world sex video. Mm-hmm. And we give them complete creative freedom as to what they do in this video. The one thing we ask them to do with it is to contextualize their real world sex, because real world sex has context. It has a backstory. Right. It has relationships. And so, you know, different people do different things. Some people like to talk to the camera, talk about why they chose to do this. Others, you know, create cute little funny creative vignettes and scenarios. but essentially, what we are enabling you to do there is to get to know our Make Love Not Porn stars, singles, couples, triples, threesomes, you know, whatever it is, and to actually see their real world sex as just a totally seamless additional dimension of their humanity. Mm-hmm. And that in itself has its own fascination. So in the year we first launched, and we get amazing feedback every single day, we get wonderful member emails. So a man wrote to me and he said, you know, I never pay for porn. So read about your site. I thought, I'm curious, I'll check it out. But I was determined I was not going to rent any videos because I don't pay, even though it's real world sex. He said, I began watching one of your intro videos, and the couple in it was so interesting, I thought, I just have to see how these guys have sex, and I rented the video. and that is literally how it's meant to work. Years ago, and before we ever launched, I was telling a friend of mine, Matt Breimer, who's one of the founders of General Assembly, I was telling him about the idea for MakeLoveNotPorn.tv, we were building at the time, and he went, so Cindy, so it's like how in your friend circle, you have these hot friends and you've always wondered what it'd be like to watch them having sex, and now you can. And I went, yeah, it's exactly like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the anecdote about the guy who said he didn't pay for porn but then ended up coming in, I do think, yeah, it's just kind of that honesty and your Make Love Not Porn stars putting people in a really comfortable space, which, and kind of feeling like they're part of the conversation almost.
But also, Sam, it's because we are so many more things than people expect. Mm-hmm. So we are doing something utterly unique. I always explain to people that the reason amateur is the biggest growth sector in porn has nothing to do with porn. It has everything to do with the fact that everybody wants to know what everybody else is really doing in bed and nobody does. And now for the first time ever at Make Love Not Porn, we are showing them with a social media window into everybody's real world sex lives. And the thing about that is, so porn is purely and simply masturbation material. That's its mm-hmm. function. We are not just that. We are that too, by the way, extremely happy to be that. But we are so many more things beyond that. For example, social sex is enormously reassuring because mm-hmm. we celebrate real world everything. Real world bodies, real world hair, real world penis size, real world breast size. You can preach body positivity all you like. You can try mm-hmm. and teach self-love. Nothing but nothing makes you feel great about your own body, like watching people who are nobody's idea of aspirational body types having a bloody amazing time in bed.
Yeah.
You know, getting turned on by each other, desiring each other. Our mantra is everybody is beautiful when they're having real world sex, and they really are. Then social sex is also reassuring because we celebrate the awkwardness, the accidents, the messiness. Mm. If you only learn about sex from porn, porn teaches you that sex is a performance. Nothing must go wrong. You've got to do it right. Oh my God, that was so excruciatingly embarrassing. I can never speak about this to anybody ever. We go, if you can't laugh at yourselves in bed, when can you? You know, and so in our videos, ridiculous things happen because that is what happens in the real world. Then we celebrate real world emotion, love, intimacy, feelings. Our members write to us, and our Make Love Not Porn stars, and they say things like, you know, one man wrote and said, the sex in that video was incidental. I want what you guys have. I saw the way you looked at each other. I saw the way your eyes met. I hope one day I can meet somebody I will have that with. We get enormously moving emails. Mm. And we play an especially important role given the times right now. Because obviously, and I enormously welcome this, the Me Too movement has surfaced all the issues of sexual harassment, sexual assault, rape, sexual violence, and brought them out into the open in a way they never have been before. And that has sparked a very much needed, again, open dialogue in society about consent. Mm-hmm. But here's the issue, that there are tons of brilliant think pieces and editorials and articles. Everyone's writing about consent. Nobody knows what that actually looks like in bed.
Yeah.
Nothing but nothing educates people about great consensual communicative sex, good sexual values and good sexual behavior, like watching people actually having that kind of sex. And the only place you can do that on the internet is at Make Love Not Porn. We are education through demonstration.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I mean, obviously not just with porn, but even with how sex is portrayed in the movies and the fact that that's how boys and girls from a relatively young age start learning about what sex is supposed to look like, which is such a just false, I guess, kind of unbelievable view of what sex is actually like. And so you almost kind of have to re-educate yourself as you become a sexual adult.
Except that some people never do.
Right.
You know, if nobody around you is talking about sex, that's what you grew up with and it fucks you up for life. Make Love Not Porn operates in the single biggest market of them all. Not sex, not porn, the market of human happiness. Mm-hmm. And the thing that keeps me going through 9 very long years of fighting a battle every single day, when I've wanted to give up many times, is because I see every day in the emails we get the enormous global human misery and unhappiness caused by the fact that we don't talk about sex. When I say to people that Make Love Not Porn's mission is one very simple, very single-minded thing, to make it easier for every single person in the world to talk openly and honestly about sex, because we don't do that currently, people don't get how massively, profoundly, fundamentally beneficial that would be. I designed Make Love Not Porn around my own beliefs and philosophies, one of which is that everything in life starts with you and your values. So I regularly ask people the question, what are your sexual values? Mm. And nobody can ever answer me because we're not taught to think like that. Many of us, if we're lucky, are born into families where our parents bring us up to have good manners, a work ethic, sense of responsibility, accountability. Nobody ever brings us up to behave well in bed. Mm-hmm. But they should, because they're empathy, sensitivity, generosity, kindness, honesty are as important as they are in every other area of our lives where we are actively taught to exercise those values. So here's what I hope will happen if Make Love Not Porn manages to achieve its social mission at scale. Mm-hmm. Parents will bring their children up openly to have good sexual values and good sexual behavior in the same way that they currently bring them up openly to have good values and good behavior in every other area of life. We will therefore cease to bring up rapists, because the only way that you end rape culture is by inculcating in society a universally openly talked about, promoted, understood, operated, and very importantly, aspired to gold standard of what constitute good sexual values and good sexual behavior. When we do that, we also end Me Too. We end sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual violence, all areas where the perpetrators currently rely on the fact that we do not talk about sex to ensure their victims will never speak up, never go to authorities, never tell anybody. When we end that, we massively empower women and girls worldwide. When we do that, we create a far happier world for everybody, including men. And when we do that, we are one step closer to world peace. I talk about Make Love Not Porn as my attempt to bring about world peace, and I'm not joking.
So again, that was Cindy Gallup, a consultant and founder and CEO of Make Love Not Porn, as well as the sex tech fund All the Sky Holdings.
Now, I thought what she was saying, she said, I picked up on one thing that she was saying about how she thinks that like having a like nude picture or video online in the future won't be weird. like she'll remove the stigma because it won't be unusual. And I was like, wow, like the future she envisions is, I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because I think about this regularly with politicians and how like the current generation of internet kids, when they come to the age that people from their generation are being elected to political office, like everyone's going to have internet dirt on someone.
Oh, speak for yourself, Sam. I'm clean as I come.
Okay. But yeah, I thought that was interesting when she was talking about the kind of white male founders who just won't talk about sex being on their platforms, period. Like, they act like it doesn't exist. Whereas she's like, let's take this from being this private thing that allows for harassment and revenge porn and all of these like really messed up non-consensual internet actions that people take, and let's flip it and just bring it out into the public and make a kind of positive conversation around it. I mean, I do think it's pretty radical, but it's definitely at least an interesting thought experiment.
I guess one thing I'd be kind of interested in her opinion on that I don't think was quite touched on, but I wonder what you think as well. It's like, I guess with like online dating and sort of the effect of porn on online dating, because on like, I guess you hear on like the dating apps and I guess on gay dating apps, you are often sort of sent just like unsolicited pictures of unattractive looking genitals. And like, is that due to porn? Like, why do people feel the need to send a dick pic? Like, where's that come from? That's a great question. is that due to people watching a lot of porn and thinking, you know, this is what people want? They want to see this. You know, when I've been on dating apps and I've been sent, you know, unsolicited pictures of people, I don't want that. And I just will, you know, reply with something, you know, like, you know, where's the rest of it or something. but I just don't get that.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things going on there. Like, and I think Sam Carr talked about it as well. I think having such pervasive porn online that is such like fake sex, it really objectifies the women in the case of straight porn, in my opinion. But it also like through that objectification takes away this sense of empathy and this idea that like that other person is a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And she talked about that as well, that like if we can talk about sex honestly and if we can put these pieces of context around it to show the ways in which there's a relationship or there's love between two people or even not love but just like mutual respect, that we will move towards a culture that doesn't have that harassment, doesn't have that violence, maybe even like towards ending rape culture.
I guess that's a point where you sort of get with gay porn again, going back to the egalitarian aspects. Like, I generally would say it's more fair, you know, both parties are kind of looked at as equals. I don't think it has a gaze as such. I don't think there's the gaze for the man, like with straight porn, it's not got a male gaze and the female sort of just there as an object.
What did you think about, for her platform, you do have to pay for it? What did you think about that?
Well, I think there's so much free stuff out there. I think she'll find it hard to kind of tap into the straight male market when kind of everything's made for them and it's out there. So why would, I know she talked about the guy that, you know, never paid for it and then watched some of her stuff and then did.
And I wonder if maybe women are more willing to pay for porn because there isn't porn that appeals to them very readily available on the internet. But I also wonder if like those women who will pay for porn might bring that into their relationships and like show their partners or like make it more part of the
conversation. So you think it's sort of a female mission to pay for the porn and then change the men? Perhaps. I think I was speaking to someone recently and they were talking about having Netflix. They were saying, you know, they pay their subscription and then they get all this access to all these films. And then they said there was a film they really wanted that wasn't on Netflix and they were faced with the prospect of renting it. Sort of a one-off payment to see it, and they were like, no, I'm not going to rent a film because I have Netflix. You know, it's silly that they don't go to the cinema because they've got it all on Netflix. They just find, you know, they'd find something on Netflix they want rather than actually rent something else. And it's the same thing, I think, with all the free porn out there. Why would somebody ever pay when there's enough there? Especially, especially straight guys, when it's all for them. I can maybe understand women wanting to pay because there isn't anything for them. So if there is something suddenly made for them, they have to pay a bit. Maybe they'd be interested. But I do like your point, actually, about, you know, maybe it is up to the woman, you know, in a way needing to kind of try and introduce their partners to the reality of it through the kind of the made for them porn. But at the same time, should women have to? Like, should it be a woman's job to have to introduce their partners to, like, normal sex? Like,
well, that's interesting because I feel like we're kind of in this weird cultural moment where it's like no one's educating anyone about healthy sex relationships. At least, I don't know, where I grew up, like, sex ed was like, don't get STDs.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there's no part of society, be it like schools or like even a lot of parents, even a lot of kind of progressive parents, really talking about like sexual relationships and healthy sex and those like awkward moments and all of the things that kind of are unplanned that happen in sex. And so, yeah, maybe female partners. I mean, she's doing it. Like, that was the whole impetus behind her.
Yeah, but I think, as she said, you know, nobody else was doing it. She's having to, you know, really kick on because no one else was. And I think it is a bit rich to think that every kind of woman has to educate the man on how to have sex. You know, you'd like to think that the men could perhaps kind of at an early age be kind of prompted on how to do it themselves. In a way, it's almost up for them to be signposted to the more like educational stuff at a young age, because it's happening. Yeah. Like 12, 13-year-olds are watching porn. It's going to happen. Like, I don't know if you can stop that. And I guess maybe there needs to be a conversation about where young people should be looking. I don't know. But yeah.
You know, I do think that women, whether they want to or not, do often take on part of like a little bit of an educational role when it comes to sex. I think a lot of women hit a certain age where they're like, okay, I'm sick of having bad or mediocre sex, and so I'm gonna just speak up.
Yeah, but on speaking up, is it a communication thing? Like, is it a fact that perhaps straight couples don't communicate well enough about sex? Is it too awkward to have these conversations? Because with gay sex, you kind of need to have these conversations. It's not as simple as straight sex. There is more conversation, there is more talking, and there's also less sex education for gay people. You know, you just have to, people do watch porn and then they learn from that, but then when it comes to it, you have to have certain conversations and you work out logistics. I think they, you know, a lot of gay people that or bi people have to say that gay sex is better because there's more communication. I don't think it's inherently better. I'm sure there's, you know, straight sex is just as good, but maybe it's a communication level and there's more connection through communication.
No, I think absolutely. But I guess you have to have at least a place where you get that role model of communicating from sex from. And if that has to be infused in our porn to change our habits, maybe, but, yeah, so be it.
Again, though, is somebody that just wants to, like, jerk off, are they going to really want to, like, if they just want to get something, like, they've got, like, 10 minutes before they got to, like, get ready to go to work or something, or like, they're really tired and they just want to, like, get some stuff going before bed. Like, do they really want that? Don't they just want to, like, cut to the action? Do they really want this kind of, like, slow, like, this is how you communicate when having sex kind of video? I'm just trying to think of, like, what the ideal is and what in reality actually would work.
See, I think one of the challenging things as a woman watching porn, like, it's just so unbelievable sometimes that it gets in the way of enjoying it or getting that sexual gratification from it. So I think if you could go to a place where you knew that pretty much all of the videos would not have those elements that make them so unbelievable or so fake, that you could actually more easily get into the videos. And I think that's what a number of other kind of feminist porn creators are working towards. But again, that is directed towards women. So
I can appreciate that. I can't quite relate to your experience, but I can definitely understand what you're saying. And I can see from, you know, even just seeing like adverts for straight porn online, it looks terrifying from a woman's perspective. Like, seeing the kind of stuff that's advertised, it's like, really? Like, I couldn't imagine, you know, you clicking on it or any other woman clicking on it and not marketed towards you guys at all.
Yeah, for sure. So you were a little skeptical about this, like, social sex idea. Hearing Cindy talk a little bit more about it and kind of her vision for it anyway, what was your takeaway from that social aspect of it?
I think it's bold, and I think that, I guess there must be some market for it if people are, you know, it's growing and people are getting involved. But for me personally, I don't think I'm going to be signing up anytime soon. But I think it could create sort of more well-adjusted people, and people with better adjusted sex lives. I can see that.
I think one interesting part about a few of the videos that I saw the, like, trailers for is they almost were selling themselves as being educational, whether it was about different types of sex or, like, you know, more, like, nuanced things within sex. That was really interesting.
Maybe that is the answer to sex education. Like, maybe young people should be directed more towards that kind of website, like, actively directed towards it, because at least it's sort of all consensual. Everyone knows what's going on. It is more of a kind of socially acceptable thing in a way.
Yeah, but, like, they're also real people having, that's what, like, I mean, real experience. Yeah. Like, maybe, so it's not like hokey or, like, actors.
Yeah, that's what,
you
I mean.
Know
like,
what I mean?
Maybe, like, somebody should actually, like, there should be almost a campaign to direct people in that direction, like younger people, so they learn in the right way, because they're going to learn anyway. They're going to engage anyway. There's no point trying to stop people. Maybe yeah. just actually direct them in the right way.
I thought that was something really interesting as well when we were kind of getting more into that education discussion, is when she was talking about how she asked people what their sexual values are, and they almost can never answer because they haven't really thought about that. And it's not something, like she said, that we talk about. Like, that does seem like something that in some part of society, or probably ideally more than just one, we have more, like, open and honest conversations about that. And I do think that that would help get rid of harassment and violence and some of these really messed up relationships between men and women in particular, that I think do come out of this kind of objectification of women in various parts of society.
I think another thing I wanted to add is I wonder what people really want from porn. Like, do people want reality, or do people want an escape almost?
First of all, I think there's space for both of those things.
Okay.
Those kind of types of sex to watch. And I think that's good if people can have a more varied kind of watching of sex diet, so that you don't get to a point where all you watch is, like, one super specific fantasy thing and think that that's what real sex is. But on the flip side, I agree, like, people have their own fantasies and porn is an indulgence, and I think that's why she is very clear to call what she's doing not porn. So I think it's kind of saying, hey, we need this other thing over here to move us to a place in our real sex lives that's a little bit healthier, but also, like, more fun and more willing to talk about it.
I'm Jonathan Blackwell, or Johnny, one of the co-producers of The Gender Knot.
And I'm Sam Baker, the other co-producer. Your normal hosts, Naz and Dan, will be back next week.
Hope you've enjoyed the episode.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.